Welcome back to the Reconnected podcast. In my world, I'm fortunate to connect with people who not only inspire me through the work they do, but somehow also help to brighten my own light. For the occasions when this happens, there seems to be a direct line from their energy to mine, even if we don't see each other for years. That spark pops back up instantaneously with each connection. Today, we're joined by one of those people who both challenges me to tap into my own creative side while also amplifying the passions we both share around art, music, education, mental health, and creativity. Today, we're joined by an incredibly talented artist, musician, therapist, educator, creative, and all-around great human. I met Tom years ago through our shared passion for creating educational access and greater understanding of learner variability, I think at a CAST event or UDL symposium. I think all of the lines are kind of blurred over the past few years, but it's been a while. And we've connected several times since through national faculty meetings, through CAST trainings, and most recently just trading pleasantries and points of inspiration digitally for the past few years. From the first time we connected, we talked music, education, mental health, art, and so much more. And over the years, I've been a fan of his work. And in our first encounter, we had one of those powerful experiences where we immediately knew we would collaborate in some way. So today is likely the beginning of those collaborations to come. And Tom Hanicek is here in the studio today, all the way from Cleveland, Ohio, and we're so grateful to share this experience of having him join us for the Read Connected podcast. Tom Hanicek established over 25-year career steeped in education as an administrator, psychologist, instructor, facilitator, in social services as an art therapist, and art as a filmmaker, painter, illustrator, musician, and so much more. As an educational consultant, Tom leads school districts with systematic plan implementation that includes but is not limited to technical assistance and coaching with assessment, data analysis, curriculum design, with an emphasis on special education and universal design for learning. Tom worked as an art therapist providing individual and group therapy for adults and children living in emergency shelters and has honed his skills at holding space for and sharing loving kindness for those he encounters. Always creating, whether it be painting, drawing, sketching, playing, or any other aspect of creation in work and life. You can find Tom and his current work and visual notes in art at vassenhouse.com or on Instagram at thomasmassey71. Tom, thanks so much for being here with us.
Super glad to be here. Yeah. It's always interesting when you sit quietly while somebody like lists these things that you've done in your life. So thank you. It's very gracious and I appreciate the invite and glad to be here.
This is great. Tom, we all three of us have had some amazing conversations last night at the wonderful Beehive restaurant with jazz music and today at the Thinking Cup. And I'm just so excited to jump in here with you.
Yeah, thanks. Looking forward to it.
So Tom, let's kind of start broadly. This is a question that sometimes throws people off, but we've prepped a little bit around it. Uh-huh. You know, I think that your primary identity for me when I think of you is as an artist. And I wonder if you can share a little bit about your journey in becoming an artist, being an artist, embodying everything that comes along with being an artist.
So I can't describe how good it is to feel someone say that they primarily know me as an artist.
No.
Because it's who I am, like through and through. And yet it's something that the vast majority of people in the world don't know me as. Hmm. Because I essentially spent most of my life not letting that the core part of who I am guide the decisions that I make. I've used the analogy before where when I talk about like being an artist, and I'm in my 50s now, and like it's fairly recent that I've decided like if you can imagine like driving a car somewhere, it's fairly recent that I've allowed the artist in me to be at the steering wheel to decide how fast to go, how hard to push on the acceleration pedal and when to hit the brake, when to turn, where to turn. For most of my life, I mean, the artist is always there, has always been there, but he's been in the back seat or at times been in the trunk. Because of life, I think, you know, there was a lot of coming to terms with like, what is an artist? Because I didn't grow up around artists. Like I grew up around people that wanted good for me, that wanted me to be successful, that didn't understand that there are artists in the world that are successful. And that doesn't mean they're successful in like all the traditional ways. So for me, it was like, you know, you've got to go to school. You've got to get a good job. You've got to, like not be an artist, you know? So exciting for me to hear that, like, that you can see, like you see me as like, that's primary. 'Cause it's been a while. Yeah.
It's so interesting in your role as educator too, right? I see that we have so many different layers to who we are as we show up in the world. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as we were promoting universal design for learning and helping support educators understand that, you know, we talk a lot about what success means. Mm-hmm. Like, what is this version of success that especially young people who are trying to figure out their lives and go through the motions. And even now, as we're older, we're trying to figure it out each day too. Mm-hmm. You know, we hold on to these ideas of what success might mean. Mm-hmm. And success is like, in my mind, so fleeting and hard to capture. It's like running water, right? Like you can feel successful in a moment, then all of a sudden it's gone and you're like off to thinking about or doing something else. But this idea of success sometimes, I think, can really isolate and push down these parts of ourselves mm-hmm. that sometimes are just like screaming to come alive.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, as you're talking, I'm thinking like I went to good schools or what would be considered good schools and was on what was called like a college preparatory track in high school and never once took an art class.
Wow. Hmm.
So like, how does that happen?
Yeah.
And here's the thing is like, I've been making art since I can remember. Mm. Like I was digging in the backyard, digging up clay to make little sculptures when I was little. I had to make things all the time. I had a paper route, so I saved money and I would go and I would buy generic tennis shoes, but I would buy two pairs and I would come home and undo all the stitching.
Oh, wow.
And I would add my own stitching. Like, I just did this independently.
That's
like,
so cool.
And nobody, like, again, nobody in my world was like, well, this kid has got something that he needs to do. Mm. Let's ask him about it or let's channel it in a way that fits somewhere. Mm-hmm. But, like, I was in school and you know, I was on the college prep track and performing miserably. Mm. I mean, like miserably, like I, as a sophomore, I had like a 1.3 grade point average. Just not a good student. But yet doing all these like creative things independently because they didn't fit anywhere in school. I had no idea what I was going to do. And this is where like that whole artist thing is like that's the artist who's unstitching tennis shoes as a teenager, trying desperately to say, can I drive the car and make some decisions, but having no guidance to, you know, to figure that out. Yeah.
I think this idea of like what traditional success or, you know, collegiate prep looks like, where, you know, there's a lot of other people making decisions for young people to say, this is where things need to go and be. And I think that, you know, and we hear these terms a lot in media, but it really comes from mental health and psychology, thinking about how there's a lot of masking going on to kind of just fit in the path or the box that is expected of us or of people.
And there's plenty of kids. We see it all the time, kids who are on the surface, like on paper, quote unquote, successful, and they're struggling on the inside with all this pressure that is, as you would say, in their backpacks.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, as far as like the pressure thing for me, I for whatever reason, school and learning for me, like I didn't like getting bad grades. I wasn't like, you know, a rebellious, like getting bad grades for the sake of it. But I never really cared. Like that I needed to get, so I know there are some students that are like I need to get a 4.0 grade point, like I need to get in the best college. It's like, for me, I could care less. But I knew that there was something I needed to do. And at a certain level, like what mattered for learning for me was, in learning, I was just, and I still am, I'm like curious about everything. And so I've always let my curiosity, and I think that's also a part of the artist in me. It's like, I let my curiosity define my, like I would take classes and be like, I have zero interest in this. And I would go through the motions, but then, success, what it looks like. I think back to when I was young, especially like in high school and college, and think, how do people know already what they want to be? Like, to me, that seems so, like, I don't understand that. I can appreciate it with, like, when you see like the Tiger Woods, it's like, I'm born to be a golfer. Or you see people that like, they just know. I don't know how that happens, but I didn't. I just didn't. And so I kind of fumbled through, and I got into college on a letter of recommendation, essentially. I had a school counselor say, I remember meeting with him as like a senior, and I wasn't getting into college. And he said, you should go to college, Tom. Like, trust me. And I'm like, oh, how do you get in with this kind of grade point average or whatever? And he's like, we'll get you in, and then you'll make the best out of it. You'll figure it out, but you need to get in there. I had the same experience as an undergrad. I wasn't the best undergrad student, but I had a professor say, where are you going to grad school?
Wow.
Just after a class, he actually, during the class, he said, can I talk to you after class? I thought it was like, I had this like mapping in my brain, like I was in trouble or something. Like, why does he want to talk to me after class? What did I do? And it was actually a very discussion-oriented class. And then afterwards, I went up to him, and his line in was, where are you going to grad school? I didn't even know what that meant.
I didn't
even know what that meant.
Yeah.
But he saw something in me relative to, you know, how I think. And that, I think that curiosity more than anything is just,
I was going to say, you mentioned that you weren't a good student, but, and this might be controversial, but I have to say it, I would trade straight A's over curiosity in a learner any day. Right? Because, you know, forget about, you know, fitting in the box and checking off the boxes as you go. To have a curiosity about things you're experiencing and seeing and interactions you're having, I think that's what life is about.
So I think that's why we get along. I agree. Like, I wish that were a metric for success in school per se, and maybe it is in some schools. It's an area of focus. It just wasn't in mine.
Well, it also allows you to do whatever you do in the long term as an adult really, really well when you're curious.
Yep.
Because you dive into it, you understand it. You know, you can't, you can do things in your career, but to truly understand it and to experience it, and our conversations, you clearly experience the things you're doing within your professions. It's you embody it, right? Which is what great, you know, beautiful, amazing things come from that more than anything.
Yeah, I'm thinking about, you know, my initial statement of like, I see you as an artist. And it's interesting because I think anybody who creates can be an artist. And we had my meditation teacher on, Fez was here, and we were talking about how we think that everybody kind of just shows up in the world with a spark of something inside of them. And what we do with it, how we amplify and tune that over time through experiences, through explorations, through curiosity, is kind of what that journey and path is about. And you know, to your point, thinking about art and being a creative and an artist, I think we all show up with some of that curiosity and spark of creativity mm-hmm. that through different interactions and experiences, and I wonder if we can go back in time and talk a little bit about, you know, what your educational path was, because mm-hmm. I think that both might have tried to snuff out that mm-hmm. spark of creativity and artistic exploration early on. And then it also planted some really mm-hmm. deep seeds that started to grow and flourish. And I think, you know, for the listeners out there in the audience and anybody of any age, just to remember that sometimes creative exploration can give us life, can give us excitement, can give us an opportunity to express ourselves in ways we might not have even known. We were talking before about a student I work with who was ripping things up. And we were talking about like what that could possibly mean and how that can look. And I have my hypotheses and you named it. You put like a label to it mm-hmm. that became an artistic creation. Whereas somebody else looking at that yeah. experience might have seen it completely different.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. The process. Like, so I think this, I can kind of attach sort of going back before going forward here. So, so I first sort of felt good about school in college when I found studying art therapy. Mm. So like for me, like I went to college, I didn't know what I was going to do, but I've always been like I've always been someone who just felt very deeply, especially for like humanness. And like I was the kid, my mom would bring us downtown in Cleveland the day after Thanksgiving. It was like this big thing where people would come downtown. And every year she would give us a couple dollars. So I'm one of five kids, give us a couple dollars to buy something special for ourselves. And my mom tells me this story, but I remember it. There was this homeless man without legs who sat up on a piece of cardboard in front of a Woolworths in Cleveland, downtown Cleveland. And every year I would give my money to him. So I always had this like from when I was very young, like others need to be taken care of. Mm-hmm. So I've always been caring and like wanting to help at people. And then like there's this artist in me. So I went to college and I started to take art classes and it was in heaven for the, like I'm taking these studio art classes for 3 hours and it's like a blip of time. I'm
wow.
like just thoroughly heaven. Like, and then I found this art therapy area of study where it was like a combination of like who I am as a person and how I relate to others. And then using art as a means to relate and connect. And so mm-hmm. back to the creativity point that you're making, one of the core foundational elements of the field of art therapy is believing. And I believe this, which is why the field was something the work is something I did for so long and loved is every person has an innate need to create. We all do. You have to believe that. And I believe it at my core.
Mm.
It's just everybody's innate need varies.
Mm-hmm.
So like some, I like to think about it like a faucet. So some people's creativity, it sort of drips maybe, or they turn the faucet and they have control over how much they create or when they create. And they're really capable of doing that. My faucet's broke in a beautiful way. It just flows all the time.
Wow.
I didn't know that. I didn't have the wisdom to know that when I was younger, that it could be a beautiful thing that it flows all the time. So if we continue with that faucet thing, is I think people in my life wanted me to fix the faucet.
Mm.
They wanted me to have control over it. And sometimes when it poured, I was difficult to be around because I did weird things. So for example, like I feel art, like just talking about it right now, I can feel it. I went to the art museum yesterday in Boston, beautiful. I've never left an art museum without tears in my eyes.
Mm.
Like I feel it.
You said that about the symphony too.
Yeah, well, as a child, I went to see the Cleveland Orchestra in Cleveland. And they were tuning their instruments and I just started crying. And I was a child. I was probably like 8 at the time. And I didn't know what that meant. And it was scary actually, because it was like, I'm looking around like, why am I the only person in this space that is like, and I'm sobbing, like literally like I'm not just sniffling.
And not in a bad way.
No,
well, it was like
But Jerry, for everyone around me, it was a bad thing.
But how did it feel though?
Oh my, like actually it was like beauty running through me.
Yeah, right, exactly.
But, this is that faucet thing again. It was like, I thought I was broken. Mm. And it's taken me most of my life to come to a point of being like, no, that's actually a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
But in our world, I think there's so many constructs. There's so much expectation.
Mm.
There's so much what is normal. You know, so much perception of who people should be, what back to that success conversation, that we don't sit and like look at a situation like that and think, there's something beautiful happening here. We apply, this is the label, we are like a default to label things. Mm. And an emotion typically is something that makes people uncomfortable.
And Tom, your experience is in some ways without words.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, you know, Jerry, in so many ways to this, like even now, I feel like my words are always failing me.
Mm.
When I show my art, I am all good.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I show my art and I see people interact with it, I just feel a sense of like they see me. And that's another art therapy thing. Like I know that art bypasses all the nonsense. So like if you want to talk psychology, like we're really good at censoring our words.
Mm.
Like especially as you get older, you get really skilled at being able to frame things in a certain way.
Mm.
When you make art, there are no censors.
Wow, that's a good point.
It's pure, like it's primary process from like a psychology terminology. It's primary process. It's like pure id almost. It's
what you are aiming for in a therapy session is just be honest, just have no filter. Like that's the pinnacle of therapy.
So as an art therapist, when I sit with people and I ask them to make art, I know it's super powerful. With respect to, I'm getting them in their most honest, raw. And then sometimes they'll make art and they'll look at it and they'll see themselves like they'll have an awareness and it scares them. Because it's like they're looking at themselves outside of themselves.
Yeah, say more about that.
Yeah, so another core tenet of art therapy is like everything we make is an extension of us.
Mm.
Like tangible. What was inside is now out.
Mm.
And we can then have a conversation with it. So from a therapeutic perspective, I don't know quite how therapists don't use art. Because it's like you can have entirely honest conversations with, like you make something and then let's talk about it.
Mm.
So you can be talking about you through something that's outside of you. And it's very, very powerful. I've shared this story before, but many times in my career as an art therapist, I've had clients that have made something and they look at it and they say, I hate this. And they'll want to rip it up or they'll want to throw it out. And I always would of course say, you know, you've made it. So you are in charge of it.
Mm.
You get to do whatever you want with it. There's no wrong here. We can do whatever you need to do with what you've made, but let's talk about it. Let's have a conversation with it. Even sometimes, sometimes people will make art, and I'll say, "What do you want to say to it?"
Mm.
And that's really me saying, "What do you want to say to yourself now that's outside of you?"
Mm.
Like you're looking in a mirror. What do you see? What do you want to say? And then there's the maybe the extension of that. It still needs to go in the garbage.
Mm.
Like I hate it. I hate it because they're uncomfortable. And as an art therapist, as a human, like I care for people. And so every time that would ever happen, I would say this with the most open heart. I would say, If it belongs in the garbage and you need to put it there, that's okay. But I would never put you in the garbage. And just saying that, I mean, we're going to talk about what a therapist can do to be all in with someone who feels like they're ugly, feels like they don't belong, feels like they belong in the garbage.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very powerful thing to say to someone, no, you don't.
Mm.
No, you don't belong in the garbage. For right now, if that piece of artwork needs to go there and it's symbolic, let's talk about that. Because undoing, sometimes artwork needs to be ripped up.
Tom, what you're saying is really, really, really meaningful in the context of how we express what's going on inside of ourselves is not always so explicit, verbal, clear to other people. And this is like a really, really deep, important thing in terms of understanding therapy, understanding development, understanding behavior, that there, it's a way of communicating what's going on in the inside, which is very complicated sometimes to be able to convey, and unconscious even, things that we don't want to say or share come out.
That's right.
You know, Alexis, to your point, your example is such a great example to bring to Tom about the kid ripping up the paper and how there, on the one hand, you said, you know, like that could be interpreted as like a negative behavior or a distracted behavior or an off-task kid. And Tom and you were so thoughtful to share, what is the meaning of the ripping? And go, and maybe you can say more, you know, about that as opposed to like, let's just fix the behavior.
So if I could jump in, as soon as we talked about this, I said, he's just undoing. That's all he's doing. And we all do it. We undo to redo. And so maybe he doesn't quite know how to redo.
Yeah.
And like from an art perspective, and this is an example of like, I see, as an artist, I see and feel the world differently. And I immediately, when you mentioned that, I thought of a sculptor who starts with a block of marble, and some sculptors reduce, they subtract. There's the process of taking the block and finding a bust of a face in the block. They can see it before they start chipping away at it.
Yeah.
But then there are also some artists who actually do the exact opposite process, where they throw clay on top of clay, and then they form it and they feel it, and they have to mold it in an additive process rather than a subtractive process. Both are important.
Totally.
And so like undoing sometimes is a great way to say, you need to do that. Let's have a conversation about bringing those pieces back together in an additive way, and let's look at it that way from a creative perspective.
I'm just thinking about, there's so many things bubbling up for me right now. I'm going to try to organize and prioritize my thoughts. But, you know, as you're just talking about this, I'm thinking about one of the most important developmental time periods, right? Adolescence, where our brain starts pruning. Right? And thinking about undoing. How powerful is that, that our brains and bodies are undoing to redo without us even having to have conscious thought to do that.
Yeah.
It's wild. So for the audience, you know, during adolescence, oftentimes we have these different hormonal shifts. We have all these big behaviors, and our brains are actually pruning back the neural connections that aren't getting used as frequently. And they're strengthening the ones that are used more frequently. So this is why, just as a quick aside, you know, it's so important to establish good behaviors during this time period, because those habits carry with us. And as we get older, it's harder to undo those habits because they're more solidified. But I was just thinking about this idea of pruning, of taking apart to put back together again. And, you know, what you said before is just so striking. And I'm sure it resonates with other people, because it really just hit me thinking about a client or a person sitting with you. First of all, the fact that they feel comfortable enough to create art with you, if they don't see themselves, if it was hard for you to see yourself as an artist, imagine somebody who has no previous experience creating in a most vulnerable state in those moments. And maybe that's why therapists don't use art so much, because maybe they're not comfortable with it themselves.
Yeah, but, Probably. No doubt. Like to ask somebody to make art puts them in a very vulnerable space.
Yeah.
So that's one of those things about being an art therapist that you have to approach that therapeutic relationship in a really and this is something that I learned over time that I think because I'm an artist and I don't value certain art over other art, that I can sit down with anybody and say, let's just create together. And there's no pressure. Mm-hmm. I think I just kind of exude that. It's like, let's just make some stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're right. That is not an easy thing to ask somebody to do. Mm. But it's easy for me to do.
Yeah. Well, I think you set the table.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And you invite folks in to say, let's create together.
Well, and this is where, like, when I see art teachers, for example, I think a lot of art teachers have that. Mm. They can create a space where creativity can flourish.
Totally.
And they don't recognize exactly how they're doing it. Mm. But they have this sort of intuitive, like, respect for the energy that creativity thrives on.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to go back to the point you said, too, in thinking about how a lot of times clients might say, I want to put this in the garbage. Yep. And it's an extension of their own reflection or identity that they're holding on to for themselves in those moments. And this is an intentional emphasis, piggybacking on what you just said about, you know, creating and establishing the energy to bring people in to create. I think it's so important for us to practice just putting it out there and saying, oh, this doesn't fit me right now, or this doesn't maybe look the way I want it to.
It's not expressing exactly what I'm trying to communicate.
Right, and that's okay. And when you were talking before, I have a client that I'm working with, and there's a huge transformation going on in her life, and she's an older woman. For whatever it's worth, I realize that 2025 in the Chinese calendar is the year of the snake. Uh-huh. And the symbolism there is that this year is meant for us to shed our skin.
Yeah, yeah.
So as you were saying, like, these folks who want to, you know, throw their art, which is an extension of themselves, in the garbage, can we actually celebrate that and say, hey, you know, there's nothing bad about this.
No.
But maybe we need to create a new version of whatever you're trying to express here.
Yeah.
How beautiful is that?
You know, absolutely. And so this is another, like, thing that I would do often as an art therapist is, so, like, to create something with the intention of letting it go.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. So, like, something I would do, and I did this in domestic violence shelters a lot, families... women who were fleeing abusive relationships, and children do this all the time when things go bad, is they think it's their fault. Mm. Like, they've done something that caused it.
Yeah.
And so what I'd like to do is to intentionally create things that need to be let go of.
Mm.
And so make them a tangible something, And I would, of course, this is something I would describe prior to, like, this is the intention. Mm. Because sometimes burying, like, we would actually, like, ceremonially, like, sometimes find a place to bury them.
Wow.
Mm.
To make, like, a representation of something that just needed to be put somewhere away.
Released.
Just released. Or we would make something and we would form a circle, and we would, I had this big coffee can that had a big phoenix on it.
Cool.
And the process was to burn it and drop, like, to write something. And you could share it or you could just keep it to yourself, but then to burn it and just, like, feel it go away.
Yeah.
So, like, yes, what you make is a part of you, but sometimes there are parts of you you need to let go of.
Yes.
They're not serving you any longer. And sometimes they're things that you believed in yourself because of what other people.
Mm.
I mean, this is like a self-reflection. Like, I, for my lifetime, I'm an artist, and people didn't know what that meant, and I sort of denied that self. Like, that doesn't serve me.
Yeah,
it doesn't serve me any longer. So sometimes things need to let go. And that's okay. That's okay.
It's interesting. We keep bringing up this idea of people don't know what an artist is. And I think it's true.
Yeah.
I think people will see like a symbol of what art or artists might be.
Yeah.
But to really understand and appreciate your full embodied experience, yeah, I think it's difficult for people to really understand,
yeah,
that.
Yeah. Well, again, I've given a couple examples, like the shoe stitching.
Yeah.
The being crying, sobbing at the orchestra. Here's another thing. It's like when I was young, I still get excited about beautiful things. I see things that other people don't see, and
I get that.
I just do. I like it, and it, whether it's color or, but like I remember when I was younger, so the sun when it sets on a clear night, the blue and the orange yellow of the setting sun create a line of green in the sky. Mm. And I remember when I was younger, I could see this green and I would get excited about it. Mm. And I actually remember doing like a sort of like a diorama for a class, like a social studies history class as an elementary student. And I made sure that the green was in the sunset of the diorama. Mm. And I had a teacher say, like, skies aren't green. Huh. And I'd be like, no, they are. Huh. So I was the kid that was like, what? And so like on a very literal level, I was being told that what you're seeing isn't true.
Wow.
And like, wait a second here. I was seeing stuff that excited me.
Yeah.
And instead of being like, and again, this teacher clearly didn't see the green. And I'm just going to go put it out there. And for people that listen to this, I would ask yourself to think about that as a metaphor as well.
Mm.
Like some people see things that you don't and it excites them. And you don't see it. It doesn't mean there's something wrong with either of you. It's just we see things differently. We like feel things differently.
You know, it's funny, Tom. It's like similar to what you're saying is, I always suggest that the students that are doing their internship always ask what the patient's taking away from your work with them, because you'll be surprised sometimes.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, okay. Oh, that's the part that really stuck with you, that you're holding on in your heart. And it may even be the same thing that you thought it was, but they're describing it in a different way.
Right. Yeah.
Or in a different frame or a different like perspective. And it's like, that's really important to be able to understand.
I got to give props, because a few years ago, pre-pandemic, that shall not be named, I ran a high school group, and all of these students would come in together, and there were a couple that were really musically inclined, one who plays a lot of instruments, who Jerry also knows, and they wrote a song about what their takeaways were, about what they learned from the executive function, and I wish they had it to share, but the recording somehow got lost. It was the coolest thing, because, takeaways, as engaged as people can be in an experience, when you walk away from it, you step into a different zone, a different role, a different experience, a different anything, right? So even us right here, right now, we might all walk out of this booth and have something else we're taking. We'll each have a different experience, even though we're here in the shared experience.
Absolutely, yep.
So going back to the idea of being curious and how much I value curiosity, and I am frequently saying this to parents and educators especially, but especially to young people that I work with, regardless of their age, that this idea of being curious, asking these questions, like you said, Jer, checking in and be like, hey, what resonates for you? What are you taking away? What did you hear or see or feel in this experience? Because it might be completely different. I say this to educators all the time. I'm sure in your consulting role, you might also, that what your goal is for what you want the students to take away might be completely different than what they're walking away with.
Yeah.
And that's actually okay.
Right.
As long as you have them reflect on that.
It's also really important
to
know.
See how it fits into the journey, right? Oh my gosh, yeah. Ask those questions. Don't make those assumptions, because, you just saying the green in the sunset, that's not where my eye focus is. But now that you said it, I can see it.
Yeah. Yeah. And so like a minute ago when I said I feel when people look at my art. So this is a good example of when I say something, that green in the sky thing allows me to say, to help people to understand that my art is a better representation of me than my words.
Hmm.
Like
look through my eyes. This is what it looks like.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, or this is what's inside of me, outside of me, with no sensors and no like work to try to articulate it through language.
Yeah,
it's just pure.
Yeah.
Whatever art I make, I just like to me. And here's the thing is like, this is the amazing thing about art is like, art has multitudes of messages. So like the viewer, every viewer is going to get a different interpretation of me.
Yeah.
Of what's inside of me in its purest form. I when I show my art, the vast majority of people, there are trends. Like I listen to people. I love having conversations with people when they look at my art. The thing that I get most is it's moody. That there's like a heaviness to it. And I'm like, okay. Like to me, I'm like, okay, awesome. There are other people that talk about seeing glimmers of hope. And I have a whole notebook of, I'll write them down. People say things. And because I love hearing what they have to say because it varies so much. The common theme for moody is there. I would say at least 60% of people say that. And I'm totally comfortable with it. I love when people say it reminds me of this. Because to me, like curiosity is all about context. It's always about like, reminds me of this.
Yeah.
And, I love that, you know, like if something I make reminds you of something,
the connection they're it's all making good. With you. Yeah.
Yeah. Like something human in me, raw in me, you can relate to. Like, well, how awesome. That's the best. What's more beautiful than that?
Yeah,
like, and we don't even have to talk. It's just like, there's this, and this, I think that's another reason why I feel art. Like there's a room at the Cleveland Museum of Art. Like, I go in it and it like it's when people talk about going to church and I grew up Catholic. So like churches hold a lot of like people feel connected to their God in churches or whatever religion. Art museums are like church for me. I feel like I'm sitting with people like me. Is it, you know, and it just makes me talking about belonging, I don't know how this is going to come across here, but I feel like I belong in a room of art more than I belong in a room of people.
I think that's true for a lot of people sometimes, but they don't always acknowledge or recognize it. So they spend a lot of their time trying to fit into these spaces that they don't always feel comfortable in.
Well, that's like people trying to be a version that is okay.
Yeah.
And maybe in service of others. Or so to me, I feel like I'm with raw form. Like I'm with the real stuff.
How beautiful is that?
I mean, any type of connection is emotional. It's deeper than intellectual, right? It's not.
It bypasses all that. The stuff that our brain. It's all in our brain because this is the whole thing people say they feel in their heart. I want to put it out there. Our brain is.
It's all connected.
It's all
in
connected.
The same body.
But isn't it wild that we like connect our chest and our heart with emotion when it comes from our head? You know what I mean?
The counseling theories class and like all the classes we teach in about therapy is like one of the common denominators of any type of therapy you're using is really gotta access and dive into and be with, help the person to be with and bring into the room the emotions. Without that, it's really just kind of an intellectual exercise, which is not bad, right? There's nothing bad about, you know, exploring, understanding, getting insight and all that stuff. But anything deeper in transformation that happens in therapy and life, right, is an emotional experience, which you know, what you're sharing about art is a wonderful representation of a way to access that, a way to explore that with someone. It's just incredible.
I was thinking when you were talking earlier that there's something I often say in my work around executive function, which, you know, comes from ancient philosophy and religion, spirituality. You can connect it to Buddhism. It's, you know, how do we make the things that are internal, external, right? And, you know, there's a whole lineage of this as an exploration, but I think art and creativity is a direct line to that, right? Mm-hmm. Finding what's internal to bring it to life in an external, more concrete way. But to your point, Jerry, if we just hold on to all these emotions, you know, our brains and bodies don't always know what to do with that. And to have this extension of art and creativity, I think is, I'm going to call it a tool, but it's so much more than that.
Yeah. Well, and you mentioned this a little bit earlier, because there is the act of sharing it too. That is, and we talked about this a little bit last night about like performing music, for example. Like when I started showing my paintings, it changed my paintings. When you start performing music, it changes your music. So like,
and say more about that.
So that's actually something that like, I mean, I haven't been sharing my art like for most of my life. Like like I said, I'm in my 50s. I didn't start sharing my art until like I was mid 40s.
I didn't start sharing my music until 2 years ago. I'm 40 now.
so, and now that I share my art, whether it's music or filmmaking or paintings, I'm just much more creative, and I don't know how to describe it. It's like making it serves a purpose, and that's all well and good. And for all those artists in the world who that's all they need, no judgment from me. I get it. I get it. Mm-hmm. But I would say to anybody who's making is to put yourself out in the world through what you've made, and let it live. Like it's now. Like, and going back to the therapy conversation, I know it's hard because like sometimes you make something, you look at it and you're like, I don't know that it's ready to be in the world. And like we can swim in that metaphor and extend it all day, but it needs to live. And when you give it a life outside of yourself, it changes you. And so I'm going to just say about, I'm going to speak just for myself. I sound like I'm a therapist. Like I'm talking about you, and I really, I'll talk about me. When I started sharing my art, it felt like I was just giving it its own life, you know. And it changed me, and that's part of like the artist driving the vehicle. Like he's driving the car, deciding how fast to go. A part of the decision to drive the car was my art needs to live outside of me and interact with the world. And even if you're someone who just posts to Instagram, like their paintings or whatever, or their music, and just that's a really good example of like you can do that. I'm not a big social media person, but like Instagram is great for a community of artists, and it's a great opportunity to say, "Here's my art." And it's Instagram is a fairly safe community of artists. And I can say that because I've connected with a lot of artists all over the world, in fact. And there's a community of artists that are, you know, they're out there. And like, I really believe that, like, what you have to offer, and maybe this is because I held on to it for so long and I didn't understand it. And maybe I wish I would have understood it sooner, is that it takes on its own.
It's more integrated into yourself, too. I wonder if that just is the natural progression. The more you integrate it into your being, the more it naturally comes out as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it changes. It's a next step that... my words are failing me. It's like it just gives it a life. That it deserves.
Speaking of visuals, I have a visual in my mind combining both of the metaphors of, you know, the artist in the trunk and then the faucet overflowing. I'm like visualizing the artist in the trunk just overflowing with water. And I think that, you know, the way you're describing things, it's almost like over time you release the water and you move to a different position where you can kind of channel and hone and direct where the water goes instead of it, let it just flooding you and not knowing what to do with it.
I'm letting people swim in it though.
I think
if I extend that metaphor, like my faucet's been full bore for my life.
Yeah.
So it's filled a body of water.
Yeah.
That I've been the only one swimming in.
Oh gosh. I'm speaking of feeling and visuals, like I'm picturing like a young Tom, like feeling like you were just trapped under this water, that you saw the beauty in it but didn't know what to do.
I didn't understand any of it. Mm. Honestly, like I didn't. Especially its relationship to emotion, because as a boy, emotion is not a thing that boys are like. When I grew up, it's a weakness.
Mm.
And to me, they're hand in hand. Creativity and emotion, they're like siblings.
Yeah.
Like you two are super close siblings. They're like the closest siblings for me. So like I was shamed with my creativity and the emotion related to it. I didn't know. And I had the faucet that was just broken.
Yeah.
And so like, that's why I thought it was broken, because I felt broken.
Oh, it could have felt suffocating.
Yeah. You say suffocating and I pause, because I never felt suffocating. I just always felt overwhelmed.
Mm.
Mm.
Like, why isn't anybody listening?
Mm. Yeah.
You know, like I always felt misunderstood, even in my own self. Like, I've gone down this rabbit hole with like becoming a psychologist, is like, you know, the notion of false self. Like sometimes people have to develop something that is that's a psychological term to say sometimes people develop a self that fits, you know? My creativity, that faucet was so strong as much as I tried to create that false self, it wouldn't allow it.
Mm.
Like it wouldn't allow, like it was just more powerful.
See, and what you're describing is like, people describe this in therapy, like when they're talking about how they feel, they're describing it like you are, like, I feel like I can't move. Like I want to do this, but something's stopping me. It's like they're describing an illustration actually with their words.
Mm-hmm.
You have done such an incredible thing with your life that is so inspirational for other people to go through something hard and painful and confusing, and to channel it not only to evolve into being yourself more fully, but you've given back and contributed in an incredible way that you have become almost like a mirror for people to do the same for themselves. I feel like a lot of therapy is some ways reflecting back someone to appreciate themselves for who they are. And if anyone's listening to appreciate differences among people's personalities and ways of being in this world, it is that I think if there's goodness to bring about in this world, there has to be different types of people to bring about different types of goodness in different types of ways.
I agree. And I would add to that to say that artists change the world.
Mm.
Artists have the power. Like art changes the world.
I agree.
We just have to let it.
Mm.
Like, and this is where, like, I think of all these artists, these young people in the world that maybe are afraid to put themselves out there in the world. I'd say, like, just do it.
Mm.
Like, let it out into the world. Yeah, yeah. We talked about so much, Jerry, when you were saying like that different types. It made me think of that Maslow conversation we had.
Mm-hmm.
Is, and when you say me growing up, how I felt and I said overwhelmed, and that sense of belonging is that Maslow language behind. He talks about how parents and teachers and therapists are like a trifecta of impactful people in the lives of young people, for example, or anybody at any age. And he talks about the idea of them being like horticulturists. So if you think about your role as a parent or your role as a therapist or your role as a teacher as being a horticulturist.
What does that mean?
Like someone who takes care of plants.
Plants and flowers. Okay.
Horticulturists, they like just cultivates flowers and makes them beautiful as healthy flowers. Mm-hmm. And he uses that and says, you need to embrace being a horticulturist to make roses into the most beautiful roses and not to make roses into lilies. And Alexis and I have talked about this, is like, when I heard that, I'm like, that's so beautiful. We need to stop doubling down on trying to make flowers into different flowers that we like or prefer. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why I was so successful as an art therapist. It's like, I just would work with kids and I loved the bouquet array of wildflowers. Mm-hmm. Like to me, like that's just, I just loved it. And I love interacting with people to help them to see the flower that they are.
Mm. Yeah.
And then we can make it the most healthy, beautiful flower. But they don't even know what flower they are.
Yeah.
And to me, like, I think about that and I'm like, what flower am I? I think I'm a peony, actually. Like, I think those are gorgeous.
Yeah.
But that, that's Maslow awesome. Gifted us that. And I think that's a life principle.
Yeah.
That, like, we so desperately need. We can't try to shape like these beautiful, these beautiful flowers and try to make them into what they're not. Mm. And so like as a child, like I don't know that like if we continue this metaphor that anyone in my life was a horticulturist, actually my dad was a gardener, but, but like applying it to like supporting humans to become. I didn't have horticulturists in my life. And schools and the world is about sorting and about defining and fitting in. Mm. And it's very difficult to know that there's all these, there's just this beauty in the world that's being compressed and not cultivated. And so, like, I mean, as an artist, like, I am in a position right now where I love, and I actually do this at my work as an educator. I work in the field of education mostly. And when if I've ever like in a meeting where we're introducing ourselves to one another, I now introduce myself. My name's Tom Hanacek, and I'm an artist and a musician. Mm. And I lead with that. Like, it's awesome. I lead with that no matter where I'm at.
Yeah.
It's important, like, and to the artists in the world, lead with that.
Tom, you know? It's so funny that Alexis, maybe you're thinking the same thing, Lex. Last night, we're walking back after we had dinner, Alexis and I were walking through Boston, and Alexis is pointing out these beautiful tulips.
Daffodils.
And tulips. And she's like, look how beautiful they are. And she's like, you know what? They're going to be gone in a few days or like in a short period
appreciate
of time.
Appreciate them.
They're going to go away. And I think to your point, we were appreciating how beautiful they were.
Yeah.
And we were also like, you know, kind of sad that they're going to go away.
I call them fake out flowers.
She called them fake out flowers. But it just kind of, in my mind, I'm like, well, you know what? Like those flowers are not there to serve us.
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh.
That they are there to exist for their sake of what they are, and you're appreciating what they, what you appreciate about them. But they're just there. They're going to grow, and they're going to. Natural course.
I love to swim in metaphor, and so when you're talking about that, I love that perspective. And my immediate connection to that was, there are also some trees that are blooming right about now that stink.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I go back to the like children I worked with in my career as an art therapist. Is like sometimes kids stink, and they're hard to be around physically, but that's part of the beauty.
Yes,
like this is, and so this is where
natural.
Like as a human being, like I can't express to you how excited I am to find stink in humans and be okay and let them know it's okay.
Yeah.
Like this is what makes you.
Yeah.
And like, that's what that's I'm
going back to what we were talking about yesterday in the flower metaphor. And Abraham Maslow is a humanistic psychologist who contributed so much to the world, but kind of got pushed into the business world of like, you need to follow this hierarchy to be successful. Mm-hmm. Of course, going back to success. But Scott Barry Kaufman, who I really appreciate and admire so much, did a deep dive on Maslow's work and has reinvigorated this idea of humanistic psychology in a really beautiful way. And it's a big part of the work I do. And I think it's also, again, Tom, what connected us in our thinking about things. But I was thinking about myself as a flower when we were talking about this. Mm-hmm. And I said, I feel like I might have been, when I was younger, a daisy in a field of tulips, where maybe I was blooming and felt good, but didn't always feel just the same as everybody else.
Yeah.
And now as I'm thinking about it, as we're here talking, I'm like, I almost feel like my daisy turned into a Gerber daisy, which might have turned into a sunflower, which I now, you know, thinking about peonies, that's like my favorite flower. And they're so graceful and like subtle, but impactful. And I'm like, maybe that's my next form of transformation. Yeah. And, you know, I think this goes back to just your whole story and thinking about how the artist has always been inside of you, but there's been all these different versions and expressions and explorations of who you are that's kind of brought you back to who you always were.
Yeah.
And now you feel more comfortable and settled and maybe safe in sharing that with the world.
Yeah, and I feel safe because you've invited me here. So I want to acknowledge that, is that you all have invited me here to feel safe, to communicate these things. So I'm grateful for that. We're in the garden conversation. I can't help but share a brief anecdote here. So one of the things I used to do all the time in my work as an art therapist in the shelters was, this time of year, especially in the spring, is I would ask for people to think about, like, if you had a community garden and you put yourself into it, like, visually, like, what flower would you be? Or are you a butterfly that comes and helps fertilizer? Are you the sun? Like, so I would just completely open it up for, like people to just own, like, how they could fit into the garden.
Mm-hmm.
And I would do it every year. And then we would actually go plant a community garden, too.
Oh,
so they
nice.
Would pick. So I would extend it into the actual, like, growing, which is a beautiful extension. But to have a group of young people who are in crisis or no longer in crisis, they're in a stable housing situation, and ask them to think about who they are and how they fit through their artistic expression. It's just so beautiful to watch and to see how they interacted and how they placed themselves in the garden relative to other plants in the garden or if somebody was a snake. And I think about, there's this one year I did this, and there was a bunch of families, but one family in particular there were like five siblings, and one of the oldest sibling was a 13-year-old teenage boy who just was very angry. Like, just he put only anger into the world. Like, he was either completely isolated, or when he was around people, it was like the stay away from me, I'll hurt you kind of a vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a therapist, that I don't stay away. I'm not like intrusive, but like I would always, I used to love doing this. I do miss do this is like connecting with everyone. No matter what
That's
they
what I
give
miss
me.
About having a classroom.
Yeah, no matter what they give me on a day to day, it's like, I'm going to come because I care.
Yeah.
So I would do that. And so I did this group, and he was in the group, this therapeutic activity to make these flowers and things for the community garden on a visual. So I put like large paper, like butcher block paper on the wall, and I gave them tons of supplies, and then they would create their representation and they would put it up into the environment. So they would create this visual community garden. And this particular boy was just, he would always come to my groups. It's like the only thing he would come to. And he was busy the whole time. And when it was time to put people's representations into the garden, he didn't put his artwork up there.
Mm.
And I had built enough of a relationship, rapport with the group that was in the house that I felt like it was okay to kind of push a little bit at that. And I'm like, I'm going to give him a fake, I'll call him Jerry, because I'm looking at you, but his name wasn't Jerry. So for confidentiality purposes, I'm like, Jerry, we didn't see your artwork in the garden. Like, you know, it's not a garden. Like everybody's, and he's like, I'm not doing it. And I felt it was okay to press a little bit. Mm. And I said, but if it's our garden and you're not there, then it's no longer our garden because you're a part of us. Mm. And he was simmering. Like I could sense he was getting like uncomfortable. Because I was really like you belong with us. Mm. I was really communicating with him through the art that you belong. Like we care about you. And so this is when like group process is awesome, because one of the other kids said, yeah, mm-hmm. Jerry, like you're a part of the group. Mm-hmm. Put it up there. Mm-hmm. And I remember it. It's one of those like therapeutic interactions in my career that just locked in because it was so beautiful and intense. But finally, after like reaching a level of frustration, he just said, you don't effing understand. Mm. And I said, what don't I understand?
Yeah, great question.
And he goes, you don't understand that if I put myself in that garden, it will poison everything. And so he was communicating. He said, if I put myself and then it. So he was in communicating. He was letting the art communicate, but he was saying I.
Yeah.
So he was like right on the bridge of knowing that art was him. Mm. And he was able to say that. And I mean, like, how powerful is that?
It's one of the hardest things for people to share is their self-hatred.
Yeah, yeah. And this was the magic of the space, is the kids supported him. I didn't have to say a word.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
That's what I love about groups.
The kids in the group saw that vulnerability and that self-hatred and said, no, you do. They're like, come on, it's okay. And what he made was this black thing. You know, I mean, it was like, and it stood out like as something that maybe wouldn't fit in a community garden.
Yeah.
Like that looked healthy. But when it went up there and we all looked at it, the group was like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
You know, so this is like one of those art therapy conversations, but then also the flower and like cultivating people to be who they need to be.
Yeah. It's okay for that to change over time too.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's such a visual representation of seeing a change.
Exactly
or
right.
Or seeing how in the context, like we keep talking about, of a community garden, that blackness might not have been as dark as he was seeing it.
Mm.
That's so powerful.
Yeah, no, yeah. So like I love living in the visuals, the like... Visual representations and metaphors to me are like I can live there. Yeah.
Well, this is for another time, but acceptance commitment therapy does a lot of this metaphor visual work too, and thinking about the mindfulness presence aspect of it. But I love this idea and integration of
integration
thinking.
Is the word here. Yeah,
the integration, but also this additional layer of creative expression and bringing art into that work. So this is a plug for all the ACT therapists out there to think a little bit more creatively.
I think it's even beyond ACT. It's you've integrated him into a larger whole. Yeah. It's a gestalt in many ways.
Yeah, totally.
I'm not sure you would be able to have done that with him if you had not gone through what you went through to integrate yourself within yourself and within your environment too.
Mm. Yeah, no, I think you're right. That's very much why I believe the field of art therapy is a space that I felt at home.
Mm.
And I mentioned this to Alexis yesterday. Like I resigned from my work as an art therapist a year ago. It was a point in my life where I'm like, okay, so it was really difficult to let go of.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, but it was part of what putting the artist in the driver's seat required. Well, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. So there's two things. One is I just want to appreciate and acknowledge what you shared with me yesterday too, is that you said in a very humble way, I am very good at holding space for people going through hard moments and sharing love through that work. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciated you sharing that because, you know, in our careers and in our lives, sometimes we get to a point where we are actually really good at what we do, and it's hard for us to say that and acknowledge it. And I really appreciated it. Like, I feel it in my body even just as I'm saying it now, and I really felt it then. Because I feel similarly, mm-hmm. and I feel like this is a purposeful blessing kind of from, for me at least, outside of myself. Mm-hmm. That is just a really beautiful opportunity that I get to live every day. But I want to also, you know, pivot, and I'm cognizant of the time, but would be remiss not to talk a little bit about what it means for you now to be an artist. What are some of the creative expressions? Because even though you're not technically an art therapist in role today, yeah. mm-hmm. as you're describing your experience of how people interact with your art, it still is therapeutic, probably yeah. for you and those experiencing the art you create. So I wonder if you can share a little bit about what you've been working on, what you are working on, what inspires and excites you now.
Yeah. So the transition from not, yes, I can't not be an art therapist. So
yeah,
like I
kind of sure.
like it through my training and through all my work, I kind of see the world that way. Mm. But because that's not a primary job, it's shifted. Like you mentioned, like bringing love to the work.
Mm.
And I want to emphasize that word because when I was a younger clinician and talking about the work, I knew that I was bringing love,
mm-hmm.
but I was afraid to call it that.
I read a book by Nancy McWilliams about psychodynamic therapy, probably like, I don't know, sometime during my training. And she used the word love yeah. in terms of what's happening within the context of therapy. And she mm-hmm. described it in a way, as you're saying, maybe yeah. not the way people think of the word love. It's not romantic love. It's not, right. you know, other right. types of love. But right. to see it written in a book, right? And to
yeah.
I just want to point out that there are other people who can emphasize this is not just like one person just bringing some random idea up. This is like a important.
Yeah, yeah. And I think as a professional in the work of being a clinician, like you want to like write the notes the way that you're supposed to write the notes, and mm-hmm. like you got to do the diagnose. Like there's a lot of like widgets to the work that are important, but for me they didn't allow me to communicate the authenticity of like, no, this is about love.
Mm-hmm.
Until like maybe 10 years ago, where I felt like I had all that stuff and it was just intuitive for me to show up to work and do good work.
Mm-hmm.
So like 10 years, I think I just showed up and that's what I just love. I just brought love.
Yeah.
And they, the kids, to be able to do a group that I just described, like, yeah, I'm a therapist. I have training and I have skills and I can kind of know how to yeah. push and pull and like, and. But it's really like I brought love. And I want to say that like, because it's important to the work of therapy. Like you have to, I think, be okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
But when I stopped being an art therapist, I think that I had to turn that inward.
Mm.
And I'm still working through that.
Yeah.
But what it's done, I think it has helped me to kind of do some self-love.
Mm-hmm.
Because for decades I was giving it.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I stopped, I didn't know what to do with it.
Mm.
And I think I turned it inward. And that's part of like this artist driving the car. And so as far as my art, there are no rules for what I can and can't do.
Mm.
What mediums I can use in order to get what's inside of me on the outside. So like this last summer, I wrote and created a short film
mm-hmm.
that's going to hopefully screen at festivals this fall. We shot it last year. I reached out to great friends, great talented friends, and I said, I've got an idea. And like great friends do, they said, well, like, let's do this. And so we shot a film. And it's something that I've been wanting to do forever, and now I can.
Yeah.
But like, if I want to oil paint, I'll oil paint. If I want to use acrylic, if I want to sculpt, if I whatever it is, there are nothing there's no wrong. And so I actually would like to say, because this is like this podcast format gives us the opportunity to speak to people, is I would say, if you have things to make, if you have art to make, if you have a need to make, like, get rid of the rules.
Yeah.
Just do whatever it is that you need to do and put it out in the world. Let it live outside of yourself. Just do it.
Sometimes that makes the most amazing art, actually, right? Like, people who go through music school, they're like, okay, now I got to unlearn all these rules learned so I can actually be creative again.
Yeah. When I apply to art festivals, to show, they ask for the medium because you can't have... I don't know if you've ever gone to art festivals, but you'll see people have booths or whatnot. I do a couple shows like that a year because I like that. But they you have to choose your medium. And when I do that, I'm like, what are we doing here? this is an art festival.
Just
one. No, and this goes back to the organization, I say I'm a painter, but I sneak other art into my booth. Mm-hmm. But actually I can get in trouble for that. They have police that make sure you stay within your medium. And I just would say to people, let the creativity flow at the pace, at the rate, let your faucet flow how it needs to.
Yeah.
Regardless of what people think. Just allow it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't you think most people who delve into creativity would say you can't force it to happen. It just kind of comes through you in these moments, right? And that's such a great advice for people to just let those moments move you and don't suppress it with these rigid rules or structures.
Yeah. And again, Alexa said earlier, creativity, whatever form, it's getting what's inside outside. Mm. So whether it's writing, whether it's, it doesn't matter. It's that's creativity. You're making I want to make sure I get it right. I posted it to Instagram recently. It's a Prince who said this in an interview. He said that there's nothing more wonderful than putting something in the world that didn't exist before. Mm-hmm. To create, there's nothing more amazing than creating something that didn't exist before. And every one of us can do that at any moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Think about that.
Yeah.
Think about how powerful that is.
Yeah.
You can put something into existence.
Even to make a joke to someone is being creative.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just it's so, so beautiful, so powerful.
I was just thinking, there's so many new studies now on mindfulness, meditation, journaling, these small moments that we can capture that become some kind of energetic expression.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether you're walking down the street and notice a beautiful bloom or a smell or, you know, I think all of that is creativity, and how you interpret and perceive it can shift and change how you feel. You know, I asked probably the impossible question of, can you describe your art? Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad you shared the way you did, because I'm going to encourage folks that are listening to check out your art on your website and Instagram and follow along and, you know, be inspired maybe just to capture a simple watercolor that can turn into something so much more. I need to ask one more question.
Mm-hmm.
There are a few characters, I'll call them, who show up frequently in your work.
Mm.
And I want to give you a few moments to kind of talk a little bit about that. So when people are checking out your art, they have a little context around these characters who show up.
Yeah, so there are themes and symbols. We all have them. And for me, I'm a landscape painter. Landscapes are important to me. Being in nature and being in the wilderness is peaceful to me. And I think there's nothing more beautiful than an ominous storm. So that's a symbol for me, clouds and storm clouds.
Mm.
Ravens and crows are a personal symbol for me that I've learned a lot about. When I was in graduate school, part of my training as an art therapist was to really do a deep dive in understanding what symbols potentially can mean and how they, what they mean to you and why you're drawn to them, like the whole Jungian collective unconscious of like, we've, like if you're, you're not the first person to feel a connection to a symbol in the world, because from the beginning of time, people
Prince
have been doing
this.
Prince
wasn't the only one who said he was a symbol.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so for me, like that character, like the raven had became a ravens and crows, blackbirds specifically, became personal symbols to me. And it wasn't until I was in graduate school in art therapy where I was asked to do a deep dive to try to understand it in the deepest way, like on a, like a biology level, even like what is it about ravens that makes them unique animals in the world? But then also, what other cultures, stories, mythologies about ravens? Like, and I learned so much. Like, I was going into, like, I always was felt a connection to ravens, but I associated it negatively. Like we call a group of crows a murder of crows, not a flock. They're a murder. There's a negative connotation. So I always thought, oh, this is like a representation of a shadow self of somebody, like a part of me that I try to suppress. And but the more research I did, the more like the context just broadened. And I learned that so many cultures look at ravens and blackbirds as positive. I just did a residency in Alaska 2 years ago with the U.S. Forest Service, where I was able to make art in like, with forest rangers. I went with them into parts of Alaska that people don't go to to make art.
That's awesome.
And there are beautiful ravens there. And the Tlingit tribe, Alaska natives, the raven is the symbol that brings light to the world. Like, come on. Like, we call a group of crows a murder. We think of Edgar Allan Poe. We think about like,
talk
like,
about moodiness.
Yeah. but like I opened my eyes to like a different culture's perception of a symbol, and it completely opens up my eyes. Like, wait a second here.
Yeah.
Like, maybe this symbol, I'm connected to it because it brings light to the world and not because it's ominous. And maybe I can bring light to the world through this connection. And so like when I would paint or draw ravens or blackbirds in the past, I would always like another reason, like keep it to myself. It's like, this is something maybe to not share. It's something that, but I'm like, wait a second here. This is another reason to share is like, you think that something means something, but like culturally, it can mean so many different things. So I would say to anybody, like, if you feel connected to a symbol, here's another example. When I was in grad school, I was very fixated on images of the sun. So like this sun image was everywhere. And actually it was like a sun that was setting between like mountains. And I just couldn't stop making it. Suns and suns and suns. So things change, like symbols change. And like, I'm in grad school at the time and I'm studying art therapy, and I learned plenty in pursuing the symbol of the raven. So I'm like looking at sun, and you can go to Jung and look at like symbol, like cross cultures, historical meaning behind symbols, and come to figure out, like, at that exact same time my son was being born, I'm making all these suns and not realizing that a sun is a very, it's a father symbol in so many cultures. Like the whole sun and moon, and a moon being the paternal, like, so like, isn't that interesting? Like, I feel like I need to make all these suns right at the same time I'm becoming a father for the first time, you know? And it's like, it's like I would say to anybody who feels drawn to something symbolically, and not just even like if you're not like creating a representation of it, just if you're drawn to it,
yeah,
is to just kind of be curious. This goes back to the curious thing. Be curious about what it means to people outside of yourself, about like history and mythology and like the world. Because I think it's going to expand an awareness to self as well. Yeah. So yeah, that's the raven. The raven is, landscapes and ravens in particular are a pretty strong symbol for me.
I love that. And, you know, when I go into classrooms and work with teachers and parents alike, I encourage them, obviously, to be curious and ask good questions of their students and children, but also to investigate and encourage the children to investigate. And I feel like this conversation here today, the past few hours we got to spend with you here in Boston, has been such a beautiful investigation of creativity, of art, of connection, of the power of learning and listening and just being. And I really appreciate it so much. And as Jerry said, you are truly a gift, and we are grateful to have you as a part of our life and now of the show. So thank you, Tom.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me and for creating a space where I feel safe and comfortable being an artist.
Thank you so much, yeah. Tom.
Beautiful.
Thanks for tuning in to the Read Connected podcast. Please remember that this is a podcast intended to educate and share ideas, but it is not a substitute for professional care that may be beneficial to you at different points of your life. If you are in need of support, please contact your primary care physician, local hospital, educational institution, or support staff at your place of employment to seek out referrals for what may be most helpful for you. Ideas shared here have been shaped by many years of training, incredible mentors, research, theory, evidence-based practices, and our work with individuals over the years, but it's not intended to represent opinions of those we work with or who we are affiliated with. The Reconnected podcast is hosted by siblings Alexis Reed and Dr. Gerald Reed. Original music is written and recorded by Gerald Reed. Editing and recording was done by Cybersound Studios. If you want to follow along on this journey with us, the Reconnected podcast will be releasing new episodes every 2 weeks each season. So please subscribe for updates and notifications. Feel free to also follow us on Instagram at ReadConnectEdPodcast. That's ReadConnectEdPodcast, and Twitter at ReadConnectEd. We are grateful for you joining us and look forward to future episodes. In the meanwhile, be curious, be open, and be well.